Okay, so this is basically a very simple tutorial to introduce some of the people that don't know anything about NRG to the Wilsonian NRG and its application to dynamical mean field theory. So the outline of this short presentation is as follows. I will give a very, very brief outline of what the renormalization group is. As Anderson likes to say, the way the world really works. You've probably seen the condensed matter paper in which he's somewhat critical of the quantum critical theory scenario. He has the point of view that one starts from high energies, microscopic physics, electron nuclei, works down, renormalizes, gets effective models and fixed points. Then I will describe in a little bit of detail in the context of the Anderson model, the Wilson numerical renormalization group, and show how this works in some detail, the iterative diagonalization scheme and the renormalization group transformation, how one calculates thermodynamics and dynamics, and then some examples of the application of this NRG to DMFT. So there's no better, I should say, there is no better introduction to Wilson NRG than this paper by Krishnamurti, Wilkins, and Wilson, which is actually, it's 80 pages in total, and it's actually the PhD thesis of Krishnamurti. So that contains all the details of the technique. I highly recommend it. Also, the original review article of Wilson is very nicely written. The second part of that review deals with the Kondo problem, and is very nice. So before I start with the details, I'd like to say something about renormalization group in general. I think everybody knows this stuff, but nevertheless. I mean, the philosophy of the renormalization group method is that one, the best way to think about it is in terms of Poor-Mann scaling. So Anderson's solution to the Kondo problem in the late 60s, early 70s, where he developed this Poor-Mann scaling idea. And this is a perturbative renormalization group in which one tries to eliminate the high energy degrees of freedom, say in the Kondo model, by reducing the cutoff in the conduction band from say D to D minus delta D, and in so doing, say the Kondo model, which has this cutoff D, is mapped onto again Kondo model, but with a reduced cutoff delta tilde D minus delta D, and then plus some further interactions. Okay, so say irrelevant terms. And so the exchange constant at cutoff D becomes an exchange constant, say J dashed. And what one in this construction, which is a renormalization group transformation, this Hamiltonian here describes the physics on a somewhat lower energy scale than the original Hamiltonian. One makes this construction, which is a renormalization group transformation, perturbatively in the dimensionless coupling of the model, which is, of course, the only dimensionless coupling in the Kondo model is the ratio of the exchange to the bandwidth. So this is a kind of expansion here, perturbative in this perturbative in J divided by D. So the idea is that as long as this is small, one can carry this procedure forward and see where Hamiltonian flows to. And the only problem with this is that if this parameter grows, say it goes to infinity, procedure will break down. And Wilson's numerical renormalization group is precisely the realization of this idea, but not using an expansion in any of the running couplings of the model. Rather, it's a non-perturbative renormalization group transformation, and that's the whole trick on why it works and solves the Kondo problem. It's not a renormalization group transformation using any running coupling. It's non-perturbative. So how does it actually work? So I'll try and illustrate it in the context of the Anderson model. And for this purpose, I have to reformulate the Anderson model as a linear chain. So I don't know where to stand, really, because so everybody's familiar with the Anderson model. It consists of an impurity interacting with free conduction electrons via this hybridization term here. And the essential quantity that characterizes this model completely, all the universal properties, is the hybridization function, which is nothing other than the spectral density of the electronic modes convoluted with the strength with which these modes couple to the impurity. So the functional form of this delta of omega completely specifies the model. And let me point out here that consider this just a single impurity without, not in the context of DMFT. The shape of this function is taken and cannot be influenced by these parameters ED or U. Whereas, of course, as you all know, in DMFT, the functional form of this delta does get changed by the interactions in the model. So here I'm trying to formulate, recast this model in a linear chain form, keeping the full omega dependence of this hybridization function with the purpose of applying this to DMFT later. So what one does is one carries out a unitary transformation to a new basis set of states for the conduction electrons. One works within this Kondo basis first used by Wilson to solve the Kondo model. And the idea is simply that one defines, first of all, this local Vanier orbital, which is just the weighted sum of the conduction electron k states, in this way, such that you notice then that the impurity state only couples to this local Vanier orbital. And using this state as your starting state in the Lanczos algorithm, one generates, by acting on this state with the conduction Hamiltonian, an orthonormal set of states, which then defines a kind of Vanier basis which gives one a tridiagonal form for the conduction electron Hamiltonian. So the idea here is that the impurity couples to the local Vanier orbital, and the local Vanier orbital itself, F naught, couples then to F1. F1 couples to F2. So one has a kind of linear chain formed for this Anderson model. And the coefficients in this linear chain, that is to say the site energies and the Hopping matrix elements, knowledge of these is equivalent to knowing the form of the hybridization function. Why do I say that? I say that because if you look at the way this state is defined, it contains the information about the hybridization function. This V can be shown. Okay. is basically the square root of this delta of omega, or its imaginary part. I should write here the imaginary part of it. So if you know what this delta of omega, you can construct the local Wagner orbital, and by acting on it with a Hamiltonian, HC, you generate all these coefficients. So knowledge of these coefficients here is the same as knowledge of this delta of omega. And this will be important for DMFT. So this is quite general, but what one actually does, if you want to, the point about putting the model into this linear chain form is that one can then iteratively diagonalize this chain. So one can consider the impurity part of the problem first, diagonalize that, then add successive orbitals one at a time, increasing the system size, and thereby solving the problem. But this won't work for a continuous spectrum of EKs. So instead, what one actually does is one has to use a so-called logarithmic discretization approximation for the conduction band. So one applies that procedure, but to a cut-down version of the conduction band. And what one does is one discretizes the conduction band into logarithmic intervals using a parameter lambda greater than 1. So one has these intervals about the Fermi level in the middle here. One chooses a subset of all the states, of all the k states, and these states, electron and hole states, so here and here, are simply taken to be the average k states in these intervals. So the electron state would be the average of all the k states here, and the hole state here would be the average of all the hole states here. And the significance of these is that, you know, states out here, I mean, these states at the edges will have a large spread in k, so they will be very localized, like the F naught I introduced earlier. And as one works in this direction, the average states in these smaller and smaller intervals, because they will have a smaller spread in k, they will be more extended in real space, and therefore resemble more the sort of block states of the crystal. So these states clearly have these energies here. And so the approximation is to use this sort of coarse graining for the conduction electron states, and to start off with a conduction band that looks like this, and then to apply that transformation to the Kondo basis on this form of the conduction band. And the reason why this is very useful is that what one then gets for the Hopping matrix elements, En and lambda n, so if you use a logarithmic discretization, then the Hopping matrix elements along the chain decay exponentially. This is for a flat band, but for most types of delta of omega, you find that the logarithmic discretization approximation leads to a decaying set of Hopping matrix elements along the chain. And this is very important if you want this iterative diagonalization of the Hamiltonian to actually converge, because every orbital that you add will be a small perturbation on the previous finite size Hamiltonian. So the procedure will converge if you use a logarithmic discretization approximation, coarse graining, but if you use a continuous band, then the coefficients will not decay in general, or may not decay in general, and then you will not be able to carry out the procedure numerically. So here I have some examples of choices for this hybridization function and the corresponding parameters En and lambda n that come out. For particle-hole symmetric situations, the site energies will all be zero. If you use a constant delta of omega, then Wilson calculated the Hopping matrix elements exactly, shown here, and this is the dashed curve here. And here I show you a specific example using, say, this comes out of the Hubbard model in infinite dimensions. So this is a delta of omega that has this three-peak shape here. And the corresponding coefficients, lambda n, for this case, you see here, eventually go over to an exponential form for large values of n. So when the chain length for large n, And, okay, I think Kevin Ingerson will give maybe some more details about this because he's worked a lot on systems with pseudo-gap types of densities of states where the behavior of these coefficients has to be studied in detail. But let me just remark on just one aspect of this example here. You will see that there are two regions where there are oscillations, or rather non-monotonic behavior in these coefficients. One region here, and one region of n here. And these generally correspond to regions where there are gaps. So the behavior is bad around here. That corresponds to this region here. The behavior is also rather nasty around here. That corresponds to this sort of partially formed gap here. But once you go into a regime where the density of states is more or less constant, or where there are no gaps, no additional structures, then the coefficients generally decay exponentially. So this is the key idea then, how to go about diagonalizing the Anderson impurity model using this technique of Wilson. And I show it here again. The model we're dealing with is this linear chain form of the Anderson model with coefficients which will in general decay exponentially. And what you do is you, supposing you diagonalize up to some system size n with n conduction electron orbitals, then you've diagonalized essentially this Hamiltonian here, so the impurity plus hybridization plus n orbitals. You take out the lowest energy scale, so this would be a rescaled Hamiltonian, rescaling by the smallest energy scale in the last orbital, lambda n, so that's your lowest sort of state is always of order one, has energy of order one. And so if you've diagonalized up to this system size, then you obtain all the eigenstates and eigenvalues. And you can proceed to add further orbitals and diagonalize the next system size. Now, of course, you know, the Hilbert space grows as 4 to the n, because if you're adding a doubly degenerate conduction band here, then you're adding 4 states at each stage. So the dimension will be too big after about n equals 7 sites. And then you have to truncate the spectrum, keeping the lowest 1,000 states or so. Now,
can you explain exactly how this is done? I mean, lambda is fixed, right?
Yeah, lambda, the discretization parameter, is fixed to.
And then up to n equals 7 or so, you can really diagonalize.
Right.
So, can you describe more precisely?
Okay, supposing you have diagonalized HN up to N orbitals, then you want to go to the next stage of adding one more degree of freedom from the end of this chain here. So your Hilbert space, your new Hilbert space, will be 4 times larger. So you have to construct the matrix of HN plus 1, which in a basis of product states involving the eigenstates of the nth cluster and the states of the n plus one th orbital, and there'll be four of those states. Set up the matrix and diagonalize it. But having done that, your Hilbert space will be four times larger than the previous iteration. Therefore, and you cannot keep on increasing your Hilbert space. So, at some point beyond n equals seven, you have to throw away three quarters of the states, keeping the system always, keeping the computation always within bounds. Now, I want to make one more point here, and that is that supposing you haven't made any approximation, then this Hamiltonian HN contains the physics on all these energy scales, lambda n, which is the smallest energy scale in the Hamiltonian HN, to lambda n minus 1, up to the bandwidth d equals 1. So you would have all the eigenstates and eigenvalues from lambda n up to a high energy of the order of the bandwidth. But at some stage, you can't do that anymore. And you have to throw away the high energy part of the spectrum. And then this Hamiltonian will only contain reliably the information on an energy scale corresponding to the lowest energy scale in this model, which would be this lambda n. Okay, so after some points, hn can only be used to obtain the physics on one energy scale. But this energy scale keeps decreasing as you increase n. But this is not a problem because you just save all your information. And at the end of the calculation, say 60, n is 60, you can put it all back together and complete the spectrum. So this is roughly how the method works. And since you have all this information on eigenstates and eigenvalues, you can calculate quantities directly just by brute force. So, for example, thermodynamics,
the origin of DMRG is that this procedure does not work always. So why does it work in this case?
Okay. The reason why it works, this procedure doesn't work in DMRG is that these hopping matrix elements, I call them lambda n. Okay, in DMRG, those hopping matrix elements are constant. They're T, the real hopping matrix elements in real space, because DMRG is for real space problems. So since these hopping matrix elements are always constant, the perturbation that you add at every successive orbital is of the same size as the previous one, and perturbation theory cannot be used in that case. Take the analogy of an atom. It wouldn't make sense if the Coulomb forces were of order, say, U, and then the spin-orbit interaction was of order U, and you try to do perturbation theory in the spin-orbit interaction, you would not get any sensible result. The perturbations have to be decreasing for the procedure to converge.
Yes, but is that a case only when your conduction band is gapless?
Yeah. I showed you that, in fact, when there are pseudo gaps or gap-like features, that these hopping matrix elements can increase. For one or two iterations, they can increase. Now, if the gap is a real gap, then they will not decay at all. They will maybe oscillate between two values, and then you're in the same situation as in DMRG, where you have to really use a different algorithm, But like I said, here, what happens typically if you have no true gap, it may be that these coefficients increase for one or two iterations, but that doesn't cause a big problem. It's only a problem if this happens for many iterations. So, yeah, I mean, the idea is that you have your Hamiltonian HN can give you the free energy on a characteristic scale TN, which is proportional to these lambda n's in the Hamiltonians. And similarly, the dynamics is calculated directly from spectral representations of the dynamical quantities, say the single particle green function in the Anderson model, can be evaluated directly. What you typically do here is that for each n, you evaluate this spectral function at the characteristic energy of that Hamiltonian Hn. And then you put the results together at the end, thereby obtain the spectral function on all frequency scales. So finally, to apply...
Superimposing them, or is there a definite procedure to combine them?
Well, if I want to calculate the spectral function at a scale omega corresponding to lambda n, okay, which goes like capital lambda to the minus n over 2, right? If I want to calculate it at that specific energy scale, I choose my n corresponding to that energy scale and use the spectrum from that Hamiltonian to evaluate this quantity. Right, and I do that for each energy scale. I find the corresponding Hamiltonian that contains the eigenstates and eigenvalues describing that sort of energy and do these sums. So
also playing with lambda.
Yeah, not within the same calculation. Not within the same calculation, but in principle, you could do evaluate the spectral function for a fixed discretization, and then do the same for another discretization parameter and get the spectral function at on a slightly different set of frequencies,
yeah.
And that could be done in principle. Yeah. So. So finally, if you want to apply this to DMFT, it's very simple because all you have to do is you have to solve the Anderson impurity model self-consistently for this hybridization function delta of omega. Because essentially we have this self-consistency relation between the local lattice green function and the impurity and the Green's function of the impurity model, which is a function of this delta of omega. And it's a functional because, as I've shown, if we know delta of omega, we know the linear chain form of the Anderson model. Therefore, we can diagonalize the Anderson model, get the eigenvalues, eigenvectors, calculate the dynamics, the impurity Green function. So it's really a functional of GD is a functional of this delta. And then iterate this to self-consistency. So
if you're not isolating things, then the delta will be such that your parameters will not have the simple form that you assume at Larmor.
Yeah, but if you're really in the insulating phase, then you're not interested in the gapped region because there's nothing there anyway. So you're...
Now that you know that, yes. But
yeah. But there's no spectral density there. The imaginary part of the Green function is zero. So there your coefficients will start to maybe increase, or the procedure will get worse in that region. But you don't use the procedure in that region. You stop at that n corresponding to the gap edge. I mean, that would be one. Oh, sure. This I should mention. This self-energy here, this is very useful if you're dealing with a hypercubic lattice where the self-consistency requires evaluating the self-energy. And Ralph Buller has derived this using the equation of motion method. You can do this for any quantum impurity Anderson model or a Kondo lattice. For the Anderson model, sigma is just the correlation part of the self-energy. It's just the ratio of a two-particle Green function to the single-particle one. It's an identity. It can be derived in three lines.
just more stables and
Well, otherwise you would have to calculate this by subtracting the inverse of GD and the G naught, the inverse of G naught. And this subtraction can give rise to errors when at low temperature, close to the Fermi level, where the imaginary part has to vanish. So this procedure is currently, I believe, the most accurate method of calculating the self-energy within NRG. So now come to some examples, the application of this method. And here's one example applied to the Hubbard model in infinite dimensions on a beta lattice. And so what you see here is just the D spectral function of the Hubbard of the Anderson impurity model within this infinite D limit for different values of the Coulomb interaction going from essentially 2 times the half bandwidth up to 3 times the half bandwidth. So this is the region where you get at zero temperature a metal insulated transition. So these are the Hubbard bands, the quasi-particle peak, and U equals 2 corresponds to, say, this value here. And as you increase U, eventually, up when U is equal to 3, you're in the insulating phase. So this lower curve here, where you see a true gap appearing, corresponds to the insulating state. You mean the typical distance? I'll show you another figure which shows here. There are not so many points. The energy scales are coarse grained.
How reliable is the shape that you can get at high?
That's a good question. Yeah, I'll come back to that. For the moment, this shows very clearly how this metal insulated transition occurs, and this was first calculated by Ralph Buller, the zero temperature within NRG. This transition occurs by a narrowing of the quasi-particle peak. So it is pinned at the Fermi level for all U, and suddenly at the critical U, it disappears completely. So maybe in a slightly more detail, close to this UC2, the metal insulated transition, let me just point out the features that one can identify. First of all, the Hubbard bands, lower Hubbard band, upper Hubbard band, separated by the Coulomb interaction U, which is 2.9, very close to UC2 in this case. So this quasi-particle peak is really very narrow. Its width is the Kondo scale. And you do see this preformed gap. So a kind of precursor to this metal insulated transition, a very low spectral density in the region around this quasi-particle resonance. This is completely different to the Anderson impurity model without self-consistency, where there is always a substantial spectral weight in that region. So here is an example in the insulating phase of the Hubbard model. And here I have not done a sort of spline fit through the points just to show you where one can evaluate the spectral densities in Hubbard band region. So see the individual points where the spectra are evaluated. Now, in fact, there are only about maybe 2 or 3 lambda n's here. So there are only two or three energy shells which you use to evaluate, say, this whole region. So the resolution for calculating the upper and lower Hubbard bands is not very high in this NRG procedure. Okay. You have extremely accurate results at low energies, but as you go to higher energies, the resolution is lower. And that's... Okay, so, I mean, that is basically the outline of the technique, and It does have an application to real materials as well. Here's an example of photoemission spectra for ytterbium indium copper 4 for the quasi-particle resonance only. So it's really a low energy property, the Kondo resonance. And here it's cut off by the Fermi function, it's photoemission. And these are experimental points of Moore et al. From Los Alamos. And we did a comparison with the theoretical calculations using essentially no parameters, just taking the Kondo scale from experiments and the resolution of the spectrometer.
So this is a DNFT calculation of the components.
Yes.
And what are basically the inputs from the parameter?
Yeah, okay. So we choose a filling, for example, corresponding to a metallic sort of heavy fermion. So not close to a Kondo insulating state. And
NF?
In this compound, the actual NF is about 0.78, I believe. It's towards the Kondo regime, certainly. It's in the Kondo regime.
So you run EMFT in a parameter regime where you get the similar value by
NF? No, of course not, because in the Kondo lattice, NF is fixed to 1. In the Kondo lattice,
that's
NF...
Kondo lattice?
Oh, yes, this is for
lattice.
This for the Kondo lattice. So,
this is
actually the reason for the deviation here of the peak position. This is due to the fact that the effect of particle hole symmetry breaking by having a non-integral NF is to change the position of the Kondo resonance, but it doesn't affect sort of the width or. Yeah, sure, it can be done. Yeah.
But in fact, the NRG that you described was for the Anderson model.
I know.
For the Kondo model.
Exactly. That was for the Anderson. This is for the Kondo model. But I just want to show you, you know, it can be used to compare with experiments as well. So.
I ask a couple of questions.
Yeah.
This is threshold torque. Is it measured for a particular point in K space?
This is not angle resolved.
Not angle
no.
resolved. I just put on.
Yeah.
Okay. And another question, you know, maybe somewhat underrated, but. Those curves for Hubbard model you were showing, that was for half field case.
That was for the half field case, yeah.
Can you describe what happens if there's no half field? How the picture changes the function?
This has been worked out within various methods, and also there are NRG results. I have some. You know, I mean, I've not studied it in detail, but essentially you have the two Hubbard bands, but they're asymmetric relative to the Fermi level, and there is still a quasi particle peak at the Fermi level.
Which is now
not quite at the Fermi level,
mean,
but
doesn't mean that the peak goes toward the narrow peak goes toward the Hubbard band.
Yes. Yeah.
And you can reproduce this.
That's no problem. So I guess that is essentially all I wanted to say. I did want to say something about comparison with DMRG. I'll do that on the blackboard. Before I conclude, or maybe I will just show you here. You see, the whole point is that, you know, in NRG, you extend the system size one orbital at a time, one side at a time. And this is really a k-space calculation, so it's not a real space calculation, but okay, you extend it in this way. And the criterion you use to truncate your Hilbert space is based on energy. You throw away, you know, the high energy states. Now, in DMRG, you would do exactly the same thing. So your super block would be, say, this would be your block, your system, as people call it, and the super block would be, say, this one with an extra site. In reality, they kind of double it, so they have another mirror image on this side. So the super block is kind of this thing, and the block would be something here, and the other side in the middle. But the idea is that this would be the super block. This is your system here. And how do you extend it from, what criteria do you use to go to what criteria do you use to eliminate states when you increase the system size. In NRG, it's energy. In DMRG, what you do is you would look at the reduced, you would look at the density matrix of your large system. So you would diagonalize with Lanczos your larger system exactly. You would get the ground state, construct the density matrix, project out from this density matrix this degree of freedom, the environment degree of freedom, and obtain a reduced density matrix for your block. Then you would diagonalize that reduced density matrix, find the eigenvalues with the largest eigenvalues, which would correspond in some kind of way to, you know, eigenvalues in energy which have low energy, but it's not quite so simple because reduced density matrix is not a diagonal object. But in any case, you would choose the states to retain for this block to be those with the largest weight in the density, in the reduced density matrix. So you see, you get the idea. In one case, you eliminate states according to energy. In the other case, you eliminate energies according to irrelevance in the reduced density matrix. But you know, I suspect that if one used the reduced density matrix criterion within Wilson NRG, one would get exactly the same results. I mean, one cannot really improve this method because the results are essentially exact already. So using a reduced density matrix criterion would be the same thing in this case, because the coefficients here decay exponentially and the procedure is very well controlled. However, one has to use the reduced density matrix when, say, these coefficients do not decay, to take into account, you know, really those states that couple strongly to the environment. So, well, you know, like I say, there's no problem with dealing with insulating phases even here, because one stops the calculation, say, in fact, one doesn't really. The point is you have exponentially small weight in this region, so where you have so although this is zero temperature, in fact, in this region here, you have a very small exponential weight, and these coefficients are not behaving very badly. But I don't know what you would want to calculate when the spectral density is zero. Okay, that's another problem, and maybe I'll mention that in the conclusions now. What are the advantages of NRG and disadvantages? So, well, first of all, it's quite a general approach. It applies to any quantum security model with some reservations. The local interactions, exchange, Hubbard, screening, conduction electron, local conduction electron, they can all be treated exactly. There's no approximation. It's non-perturbative, as I mentioned in the introduction. It only relies on the fact that this momentum rescaling factor, lambda, is less than one. That is the actual perturbation, okay, and the elimination of high-energy states. But as long as you have a problem where these perturbations are decreasing, then it's well controlled. You can access all the energy scales, especially the low-energy scales. It applies also to zero and finite temperature dynamics directly without any need for energy continuation. So really you get everything on the real frequency axis. You can calculate n particle Green functions with no problem. So there's no difficulty in evaluating 2-3 particle Green functions here. And this is like QMC in some sense. QMC is also very nice for evaluating complicated Green functions, except for unlimited continuation. So this approach has been shown to recover Fermi liquid and non-Fermi liquid fixed points. But there are problems with it. And, you know, the procedure converges for applications to DMFT for two bands, essentially, two doubly degenerate bands or less, one or two bands at most, I would say. Beyond that, one has to work with the method and see how far one can push it. But this is what one knows from solving impurity models that one can do within DMFT at the moment, for sure, but it may be possible to work on this. And then there is a problem due to the logarithmic discretization that the resolution of the method is low at high energies. So in particular, the Hubbard bands may not be described very precisely. The details of the Hubbard bands are not captured very nicely within this approach. So, and there are probably other disadvantages, but I prepared this only about 2 hours ago, so I couldn't think of any. Right. That's also true. That's a subtle point, and there isn't currently, no very good solution to that problem. But the technique that is currently used seems to work very well.
Works in case as well as low interest conversely. Yeah. Smearing things out. It doesn't work in the pseudogap problem.
I see. Right.
Because there you have a non-trivial structure.
Okay, but I admit there are situations where this would not. Yeah.
How would that suggest the Hofstadter?
This uses this solves a problem due to the fact that in these NRG calculations one is increasing the system size in a sense by adding orbitals, so there are finite size errors. Okay, the Hamiltonian HN gets the ground state, but the ground state is only an approximate to the true ground state, which you would get at n equals infinity. Okay, so if you then calculate, say, some finite frequency excitation from HN, you would be using a matrix element which takes you from an approximate ground state that has some finite size corrections to some higher energy excitation which might be well captured within HN. So you would have a finite size correction in the transition matrix elements. Now, Walter's idea, which I think is a very good one, and it's especially useful when you apply when a magnetic field is present, because a magnetic field can, mess up the low part of the spectrum by causing Zeeman splittings, and you can thereby miss spectral weight if you're working at a low temperature, right? Because the degeneracies are lifted. The idea there is, in this NRG procedure, we can go to n very large and get the ground state. So, say, and then one can do, as in DMRG, calculate the density matrix for the ground state of the largest system you've diagonalized, project out all the intermediate orbitals, and obtain the correct ground state that you use in evaluating a finite a matrix element to a finite frequency in your Hamiltonian HN. I may have not explained that very well, but the idea is very simple. I mean, your Hamiltonian HN, right, may describe, say, the excitations are sort of around here, essentially exactly, and later iterations will simply refine your ground state here. So later iterations will give you a better spectrum, say around here. So what is well described in this Hamiltonian nature are excitations of the order of lambda n. But your ground state is only an approximation to the true ground state of the infinite system. And so the idea is, using this density matrix approach, is since you do, in the end, diagonalize the NRG system sizes all the way out here, you can choose this as your ground state, write down the density matrix, okay? Then project out all the intermediate orbitals that you've added, and obtain a more accurate description of the ground state over here. It's kind of correcting finite size effects for HN, and then use that to calculate matrix elements. And that's it's very important in cases where you apply magnetic fields. In zero magnetic field, there's no problem because essentially there is no problem. That's the experience. But for finite magnetic fields, one has to do that. No. So there are improvements, you know, continually improvements for new situations that arise, and it's very encouraging. Okay, that's. If there are questions, you know. I hope I have explained it. If there are simple questions, please.